Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
What is a woman? It's the question Matt Walsh made famous a year ago when he released his documentary on transgenderism, and it's a question defenders of transgender identity still struggle to answer. In this episode, we'll be taking a look at Stephen Woodford, aka Rationality Rules' arguments related to the issue, and see if they hold up as a valid criticism of Walsh's answer to the question, what is a woman? But before we do that, I have my own question for you. What is a subscriber? You can't just identify as a subscriber of the Council of Trent podcast because that's totally subjective. Anybody could do that. You need an objective metric like hitting the subscribe button. And if you want to really get some objective evidence that you're a supporter of this podcast, consider supporting us at trenthornpodcast.com so we can keep making all kinds of great content. All right, so Woodford has his own nuanced opinion on transgender issues. I don't want to lump him into the mold of the transgender advocate. For example, he's gotten flack from other atheists and other secularists who have accused him of transphobia. The atheist community of Austin did this because Woodford criticized males competing in women's sports. In this video, Woodford doesn't try to offer a comprehensive alternative definition of woman, as much as he tries to show that Walsh's definition of a woman being an adult human female, that doesn't work either. Woodford also says, well, there is no such thing as a correct definition because definitions can only be judged on their utility, how well they work. But even if we granted this dubious claim, one could still show that adult human female is a far more useful definition of woman than any other competing definition. And it's definitely more useful than the transgender community's definition of a woman being, well, anyone who defines that they're a woman, which is ultimately a non-definition.
I think it's obvious that sex and gender are not the same thing. Sex is biological, whereas gender is a social construct. And I prefer to reserve the words male and female for sex and man and woman for gender.
I agree that some behaviors and social expectations for men and women come from social constructs, not biology. For example, pink was once considered a masculine color and blue was considered a feminine color. A 1918 article in the trade publication Earnshaw's Infants Department says, "The generally accepted rule is pink for the boys and blue for the girls. The reason is that pink, being a more decided and stronger color, is more suitable for the boy, while blue, which is more delicate and dainty, is prettier for the girl," end quote. This may also have to do with the historical precedent of the Blessed Virgin Mary being associated with the color blue and Jesus being associated with shades of pink or red. But that changed over time because male and female color schemes are indeed a social construct. However, that's way different than saying the category woman is merely a social construct that is partially or even completely divorced from the biological reality of being female. Woodford himself doesn't even go that far, and he says female and woman are correlated, but they're not identical.
Gender is a social construct that heavily correlates to secondary sexual characteristics, genitalia, behaviors, and aesthetics.
My position would be that we need a good reason to reject the common sense idea that male and men and female and woman are essentially synonymous and that sex and gender are not radically different. Woodford's argument is a modest one. His aim is to show that some biological males are women. Remember, women refers to gender for Woodford. This would then disprove the claim that women are always adult human females.
If you convince someone that some males can be women, you will have kicked down the door, or more accurately, rebutted the central premise in their position. And this is the goal for this video. I'm going to present just a few reasons for why I'm convinced that some women are males.
And indeed, Woodford tries to do that in this video. So, let's see how he does.
Now, while social constructs often refer to factual states about the world, they are not themselves inherently natural. They exist because of social norms, values, beliefs, and practices. The social construct of a castle does not tangibly exist, but the bricks and mortar do tangibly exist. Likewise, the social construct of a woman does not tangibly exist, but sexual characteristics such as wide hips do exist. and so too do behaviors. And just as there's not a single necessary condition, a single attribute that dictates whether something is or is not a castle, the same is true of man and woman.
Woodford also uses money as an example of a social construct that's not identical to a material object like paper, because if a country stops existing, its paper currency stops being money. But castles and money are material objects. They are man-made constructed objects. They don't have a natural essence. Humans create all kinds of architectural types. There are castles, chateaus, palaces, manors, and each can be defined without reference to the others. But every so-called gender of the over 100 proposed kinds of genders that exist today, they're always one of four things. They're either male, female, some combination of both, or neither. Every proposed gender can be sorted in one of those four categories. Gender has the same binary as sex, because gender and sex are basically the same thing. They reflect a binary that exists in the natural world that we attach cultural ideas to, but is a binary that we do not create. The same can't be said of the dozens of different types of homes that rich people can live in, be they manors, chateaus, palaces, castles, etc.
A good example to illustrate this are people with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome. While they are, per my view, male, that is, they have XY chromosomes and small gametes, they develop outwardly as females due to insensitivity to male sex hormones. Their testicles, in fact, are inside of them as if they were ovaries. As a result, these males are often mistaken as female at birth and are often raised as girls. In fact, if you didn't know that they had this condition, you absolutely would mistake many of them as female, as would they themselves. Now, by my lights, this one intersex condition alone demonstrates that gender is not strictly determined by chromosomes or sex organs, and thus that some males are women.
Woodford then tells a story about a woman from the 1920s named Jane, who is a wife, though infertile, so she has adopted children, a midwife and leader of a Girl Guide group, who then finds out she has complete androgen insensitivity syndrome. I don't know if this is a hypothetical or a real story, but you can find other testimonies about this condition. It's rare, but it's not unheard of. Androgens are the hormones that stimulate male sexual characteristics to develop. A man who is completely insensitive to, or in other words, doesn't respond to, these hormones will look like a woman. He won't have a uterus or ovaries, and he will have testicles inside of his body. He'll have a shallow vagina but no cervix, and on the outside, though, he'll have female characteristics, wide hips, long hair, and developed breasts. Woodford then says that it would be absurd to say Jane, who appeared to be a woman for her whole life until she found out she had CAIS, is really a man.
Then the fallout of Jane's diagnosis is far-reaching and deeply unsettling. To just scratch the surface, we'd have to tell Jane, who's always seen herself and lived as a woman, and who we too have always seen and still would see as a woman if it wasn't for this diagnosis, that she's actually a man. We'd have to tell her kids that they don't have a mum. We'd have to tell her husband that he's been sleeping with a man, and since, at the time, we don't recognise same-sex marriage, we'd have to dissolve their union. What's more, we'd also have to kick her out of Girl Guides, a group that, back then, was just for girls. And, of course, we'd also have to take back her Guides War service badge that she received for her efforts during the Great War. We'd also have to insist that she's no longer a midwife, that her financial stability completely crumbled. We'd also have to make her use the men's bathroom, and since at the time clothes were strictly divided by gender, we'd have to take away her dresses and ribbons and make her wear men's clothing. Now, I propose that this path is not just cruel, but in terms of cold utility alone, it's untenable.
I'm not impressed with this argument because while this is a shocking revelation, there's no reason given to think these responses are cruel or absurd beyond Woodford's assertions. Some of the difficulties are also only the result of discriminatory policies, like prohibiting male midwives from existing. They don't stem from traditional definitions of womanhood. In other cases, adopted children will learn a shocking truth about their adoptive parent, and a spouse, in this case, learns that same truth about his spouse. Imagine a girl named Martha lives on the streets since a very young age. and she loses track of her real age. Suppose also she hits puberty very early, and at age 13, marries a man who, along with her, thinks she's actually 18. When the truth comes out, their marriage will turn out to be invalid because she's a child, no matter how she looks on the outside. The difficulty of adapting to that hard truth, to any hard truth, such as by withdrawing Martha's adult privileges, now that we know she really is 13, regardless of how she looks on the outside, that would not justify creating a whole new category called Schmender that reduces age to a social construct based on how people appear or how they feel in order to avoid these extremely rare difficulties that come up. So just as we wouldn't use a story like that to justify Schmender overturning the objective biological notion of age, we should not use rare stories like Jane's to create gender to overturn the objective realities that we know related to sex. So later in the video, Woodford says the problem with Jane, it can be solved because we can say her sex is male, but her gender is woman because she has enough womanly characteristics. So we can continue treating her as a woman, even though she is biologically male.
We can have our cake and eat it too. We can distinguish sex from gender. We can say that sex relates to gamete type and chromosomes, whereas gender is a social construct that heavily correlates with secondary sexual characteristics, genitalia, behaviors, and aesthetics.
So a woman, under this view, is just any adult human who has enough correlating and observable female sexual characteristics. Notice that this definition does absolutely nothing to show that most transgender women are women, since many of them lack these characteristics. They are not intersex in any way. Now, Woodford might concede this point and say that all he is doing is showing that some women are biological males. But he only tries to accomplish that by saying that it would be cruel and difficult to treat Jane as a man. However, in order to make that argument, you have to show that it is less cruel and difficult to do that than the alternative, which is allowing biological males who have some or maybe even no female sex characteristics to be considered women too because of their gender identity. This includes men who just grow out their hair, put on makeup, and maybe get cosmetic surgery, who say they now have the right to use female locker rooms or reside in female prisons, even if they as a man have been convicted of raping women. There's just no comparison between the harm caused by diluting the definition of woman until it is essentially meaningless, and the difficulties involved in adjusting an intersex person's life to a radical discovery about his or her identity. The Jane case and other instances of complete androgen insensitivity syndrome also rely on the faulty intuition that if a person looks like some kind of thing, then they just are that kind of thing. But looks can be deceiving. Does Jane now qualify for infertility treatment because she is a woman who can't get pregnant? No, Jane is a man with a tragic sex developmental disorder. Appearances are usually safeguards to determine reality, unless contrary evidence exists to what appears to be the case. As I said earlier, there are young teenagers who look like adults, but we don't treat them like adults. And there are adults who look like children, but we don't treat them like children. One example of the latter would be Shauna Ray, a woman who is in her 20s, but in many respects looks like an 8-year-old girl. For strange cases like these, we compassionately assist someone who has a misleading appearance. We don't just erase the objective differences that exist between people based on observable biological factors like age or sex. Or here's another example. This woman looks European, but she is not. She's Indian, but she has albinism. She's albino, a condition where she fails to produce melanin. This is a kind of melanin insensitivity syndrome, if you will. Genetically, she is Indian, even though she lacks traditionally Indian external characteristics.
Typically, when you have a white or pale skin with a white hair or a blonde hair, there is a lack of pigmentation in your body, in your like in your hair, in your eyes, in your skin, that is considered as your albinism. For second day tha, to ekdam se crowd aayi thi students ki bahut, ki hamare school mein kuch new bacha hai, kuch alag hai, and they named me angrez or foreigner aaya hai.
And while this is strange, it doesn't justify saying that ethnicity is only something that correlates to appearances and is not primarily based on something biological like genetics. Saying we should treat people who look like women as women and vice versa, that does a great disservice to women that simply happen to have more masculine features and are even mistaken to be men in some cases, but are firmly convinced they are women. Reducing womanhood to correlations with some external features would end up mistreating women that appear more masculine and give men like Dylan Mulvaney, who present themselves as a caricature of a woman, the unjustified label of woman, even though he has done absolutely nothing to truly understand what it's like to be a woman because he's a man. Once again, Woodford's argument from utility only seems convincing if you only look at the downsides of Walsh's definition and the difficulties it might provide for someone like Jane. Yes, that definition might lead to a tiny minority of people not being able to live in ignorance of a condition like complete androgen insensitivity syndrome. But Walsh's definition also prevents the far greater harms involved in trying to change people's genders through mutilative surgery or tearing down the social structures that segregate men and women in order to protect women's opportunities, privacy, and even their bodily safety. And no other definition of woman can accomplish that important societal goal.
If we stick strictly to the traditional conflated definition of sex and gender, we end up eliminating heterosexual men altogether. That's right, we'd have to declare that straight men don't exist. What's that? You're a male who's attracted exclusively to females. Oh no, you're not. You don't get aroused by sniffing the gamete type of people, do you? You don't have glasses that scan chromosomes. No, you're attracted chiefly to secondary sexual characteristics, breasts, wide hips, etc. And guess what? Some males have those features. And because you're attracted to some males, you're bisexual. And even if you want to insist that it's specifically female genitalia that you're attracted to, then recall that Jane has a vagina. You're bisexual, my dude.
So do you or do you not have a vagina? That's what I'm trying to
say. I do have a vajayjay, yes.
Okay, good.
Indeed, to reiterate, a heterosexual is someone sexually or romantically attracted exclusively to the other sex. However, if gender means the same thing as sex, and if we define sex based on gamete type or chromosomes, then, since heterosexual men are attracted to males with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, heterosexual men don't exist. And that's pretty gay.
Okay, where to begin? Well, to start, our natural desires can be frustrated by facts of which we are unaware. But that does not mean the natural types our desires are ordered towards do not exist, or that they are just social constructs. I have a natural attraction towards eating fruit, but getting hungry looking at a wax piece of fruit, that doesn't mean food is just a social construct made up of secondary characteristics. I've just been fooled. That's all. I'm not attracted only to the color and appearance of fruit. Instead, the color and appearance of fruit are generally reliable but not infallible indicators that what I am attracted to is the food that's really within my grasp. Likewise, most men are sexually attracted to women, or that's what they're naturally ordered towards. The fact that a man may be mistaken about who is a woman that he senses an attraction towards, like seeing a transgender woman who passes as a biological woman, or seeing a man with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, that does not mean that this heterosexual man is attracted to males. He's still attracted to women. When a man discovers the person he's attracted to is actually a male, the attraction usually ceases, or he uses reason to remind himself the attraction he is feeling toward this individual is disordered. Woodford's argument would be like saying this: a normal human being is only sexually attracted to other human beings. But nearly all human beings might find themselves attracted to a virtual model who doesn't really exist. Or they might find themselves attracted to a sophisticated android with synthetic sexual features. And because they might find themselves having these rare attractions, that means no normal human beings exist at all. How does that follow? You see how the argument doesn't work, right? And yes, there are some men, who say they have no problem having sexual relations with a male who has secondary female sexual characteristics. But that would only reveal that some of these men have disordered sexual desires, and they are still what we would call heterosexual. The desire for a person with secondary sexual characteristics like breasts or long hair, apart from genuine biological womanhood, well, that's as disordered as the desire for friendship apart from humanity, like desiring friendship through something like a chatbot, for example. Or it's as disordered as the desire for taste beyond or not including calories, which you might find in something like bulimia. You can see this kind of disordered sexual desire in this clip from Andrew Tate, where he admits that he would rather have sexual relations with a man who looks like an attractive woman than with an unattractive woman.
On Twitter, asking, would you rather have sex with a transsexual, which is a legitimate 10, or a woman, which is a legitimate 1? And everyone's sitting there clicking woman, 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 because they think they're going to be gay if they do anything else, but they're not actually thinking about the question. When I say a 1 and a 10, I mean Megan Fox with a dick. That's the tranny. Or Hulk Hogan with a That's the girl. This is the question I'm asking. Megan Fox or Hulk Hogan? So you're thinking, well, I don't want to be gay, so I clicked the girl, the number 1, didn't it? You're going to fuck Hulk Hogan? Okay, there's a... He's got mustache and muscles and hairy, big dude, 6'5". It's pretty gay to me. That sounds pretty gay. I don't care if it's... That is gay.
Andrew Tate and Dylan Mulvaney have the same error. They treat womanhood as a social construct wrapped up in certain appearances. This leads to the desire to either be... or be with, not actual women in all their blessed variety, but the desire to be or only be with caricatures of women that suit their own disordered desires. Woodford and his interview guest, Forrest Valkai, then describe in this episode disorders that are present in sex chromosomes that call into question the idea that sex and gender are essentially the same.
How all the different things that go into sex are variable, and not a single one of them has only two options. So, for example, you know, we've talked about, okay, there's XX and XY. Well, there's also Klinefelter syndrome, where you have XXY, and you can also have XYY, and you can also have Turner syndrome, where you have X and then nothing else after that. And you can also have Sawyer syndrome, where you have XY, but you still have a female phenotype. And there have been women who have Sawyer syndrome who have gotten pregnant and given birth to healthy babies.
There's no difficulty in recognizing that women with Turner syndrome have a stunted sexual development, and men with Klinefelter syndrome have a stunted male sexual development. There's simply no reason to say that these people actually belong to a gender that does not correspond to their biological sex. In fact, doing that would inhibit proper treatment for their respective syndromes. For example, many men with Klinefelter syndrome treat their condition of having a stunted sexual development through proper diet, speech therapy, hormone replacement, and physical exercise to restore these lost masculine features or these weaker masculine features. But that only makes sense if Klinefelter males are men, not women. Swire or Sawyer syndrome is a little more unusual. It's also known as XY gonadal dysgenesis, and it involves genetic males, XY, who develop external female genitals and in some cases develop a uterus. However, these males do not produce ova. So while they can get pregnant, they are not women. They can only get pregnant through something like artificial processes like IVF, for example. They would not fall under the definition of a woman because they are not ordered towards overproduction, or they are not ordered towards gestation because they cannot produce the eggs that are necessary for that task. Of course, this is a tragic situation to be in because a male would feel very female given the presence of these other sex organs. I'll talk more about practical issues in a bit, but let's address two other cases that are brought up.
There's De La Chapelle syndrome, where you have XX chromosomes, and yet you have a male presentation. And sometimes that's because all or some of the SRY gene, which is a really important gene for sex determination on the Y chromosome, gets translocated over onto an X chromosome, persistent Mullerian duct syndrome. You look at, you know, men with persistent Mullerian duct syndrome, they could have part or even an entire uterus inside their body. Are they both sexes, or are they just a dude who has an interesting thing going on with them? You know what I mean?
Persistent Mullerian duct syndrome happens when a male develops internal female sex organs, including ovaries and a uterus. So unlike in the Swire case, you can make ova and you have a uterus, but you don't have a vaginal opening. So once again, you have an individual who is not ordered towards gestation, so they're not a woman. However, this individual is not like a female who has Meyer-Rokitansky-Kuster-Hauser syndrome, or MRKH syndrome. In those cases, in MRKH, you have a biological female with female chromosomes who produces ova, but did not develop a vagina or a uterus. So in that case, you have a biological female who has a developmental delay or disorder who is lacking the parts she ought to have. In the previous case, persistent Mullerian duct syndrome, you have a biological male who simply has extra parts that the male ought not have. And usually the way to treat persistent Mullerian duct syndrome is through hysterectomy and the removal of these extraneous parts the male ought not have. But even if your position in those cases were, we don't know if this person is male or female, that would not prove gender was separate from sex, because our inability to determine sex would also crop up in determining gender, since that's not clear, especially given that in this video, there's no workable definition of what constitutes a female gender. The existence of disputed cases does not disprove the existence of the overwhelming majority of undisputed cases. So it doesn't justify turning gender into an amorphous concept that can be applied in virtually any way a person feels, since there's no way to limit that definition to the correlation definition that Woodford offered. How many secondary sexual characteristics does a male need to have in order to be a woman? And since some women have mastectomies and hysterectomies, could, under Woodford's view of sex and gender, could he just don a wig and makeup and now say he's a woman in spite of the absence of any female secondary sex characteristics? Rejecting subjectivity in a definition for woman in favor of more objective definitions related to biology, that doesn't mean you can objectively sort every potential case into the categories of man-male or woman-female. But here's the thing. Every categorization system will have disputed boundary cases, but that does not disprove the entire categorization system. For example, there are rare cases of brain-dead people whose bodies don't decompose as long as they're being given nutrients. Are they alive or are they dead? Even if you buy the false view that permanent unconsciousness is when death begins, there are boundary cases where it's hard to tell if someone is conscious or not. This is also called the fallacy of the beard. Just because I may not know when stubble ends and a beard begins, I may not know the boundary between stubble and a beard, I certainly know when someone is clean-shaven and when they have a beard. Likewise, even in these really rare boundary cases related to sexuality, I may not know that an individual is a man or a woman, a particular individual, that does not negate our general ability to determine that someone is a man or a woman through an objective indicator or measure, apart from subjective gender claims.
Why not say that sex is biological, whereas gender is a social construct? By doing this, you will have a much easier time solving the issues that have been raised throughout this video. You can recognize that some males are women and some females are men, and you don't have to maintain an old view that frankly destroys the lives of so many. Jane is a mum because she fits the social construct of a woman and has brought up her children with love and care. Yes, she's a male, but being female isn't, per this set of definitions, a necessary condition for womanhood. And yes, Jane didn't give birth to her children, but as someone who bounced around in foster care, I can tell you that a mum isn't the person that gave birth to you. It's the woman that raised you.
Appealing to intersex cases doesn't justify transgender identity. Because in the most difficult of intersex cases, we aren't even sure if male or female applies, not just the gendered concepts of man or woman. And using stories like Jane reinforces the idea that womanhood is biological in nature, even if that womanhood does not include a totality of female features. But in the vast majority of transgender women, no anatomical female features are present. Once again, there's no objective standard that can be proposed to say that in order to be a woman, one must have certain secondary characteristics along with a female gender identity. Any proposal like this inevitably collapses into the Alice in Wonderland mentality of a woman being anyone who simply claims that they are a woman. This robs the word woman of all meaning and trivializes the unique experience of womanhood, which is intimately bound up in being ordered towards gestating children or producing ova, even if, by choice or condition, one never reaches those ends. Woodford's proposal isn't more attractive because you have to compare the difficulties of the traditional view, such as how to classify intersex conditions, against the even greater difficulties of this newer view of manhood and womanhood. Woodford says the traditional view ruins lives. But what about the lives ruined by fathers who become women and whose children must now call him mother and retroactively say they never had a father, they only had two mothers? What about the teachers, public servants, and employees who are constantly berated by transgender activists because those individuals won't accommodate every new pronoun or acknowledge every new gender that comes into existence or is proposed to exist? What about the children who are left scarred for life by psychological, chemical, and surgical mutilation we euphemistically call gender reassignment surgery? What about the female athletes who spend thousands of hours training to win only to lose to someone who gets to coast along on the fruits of being a so-called woman who also happens to have higher bone density and greater muscle strength because of a lifetime of testosterone, even if they're now using corrective hormones or hormone suppressants? Well, and what about the women in the locker rooms of these sports facilities, showers, or prisons, who have to live in fear of someone with a penis invading their personal space simply because that person says, "I'm a woman too"? Any difficulties that arise in the traditional classification system that makes sex and gender essentially identical, any of those difficulties pale in comparison to the vastly larger difficulties that exist in the newer view that basically divorces sex and gender from one another. So even if we looked at this from a strictly utilitarian perspective, the classical view of sex wins out. All right, well, I hope that this was helpful to you all. I'm open to dialogue with Woodford or anyone else about this question. I actually really enjoy Woodford's channel, at least on some of his older videos. He's often taken a more thoughtful approach to issues. I know recently he's gotten into kind of a let's critique everyone at the Daily Wire kind of approach, but I've liked when he's approached higher level issues in a thoughtful way. And so maybe a dialogue between us on gender, God, would also be great. Maybe I can make a trip out to England, see him, Alex O'Connor, all kinds of great people. Who knows? That would be fun to have a dialogue. But yeah, in that case, I hope this was a helpful perspective for all of you. And I hope that you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.